news and features from around Australia and around the world. This is Travel Radio Australia. Here's your host and travel guide, Ren Zviers.
Welcome to this month's edition of Travel Radio Australia Destinations. To start off the show, the first three segments will all be in the United States. Then we'll move on to Egypt, and to complete the show, we'll test out a very useful smartphone app that can actually translate many of the world's languages, make things easy for you. But first up on the show, let's hear from Jeff Harrison, who has been visiting the Mall of America in Minnesota, and he chatted with Dan Jasper.
Travel Radio Australia, and we're here in Minneapolis in the great state of Minnesota, and we're at the fabulous Mall of America. I have Daniel Jasper with me. He's the Vice President of Communications for the MOA. Daniel, welcome.
Thanks so much. Welcome to Mall of America. We're glad you're here.
Well, it's a fantastic place. I've had a little look around. I'm going on some of the rides soon, and tell us a bit about the mall, a bit about the history for a start.
Sure. Well, the mall is about 26 years old now. We'll celebrate our 26th birthday this coming August. Actually, this property in Minnesota has quite a legacy. Prior to Mall of America being here, it was home to the professional sports stadium, where the professional football team, the Minnesota Vikings, and the professional baseball team, the Minnesota Twins, and others played for many, many years. So there's history and legacy on this property. But the mall opened 26 years ago. It was a dream of a family out of Canada, the Germazian family. They had previously built West Edmonton Mall. They saw this location and the opportunity here. They told the Minnesota people about what they'd like to do. And to be quite honest, about 30 years ago when they first started talking about it, everyone was skeptical. And in fact, when we broke ground, which was in June of 1989 on this property, on this building, it was one of those wonderful Minnesota summer days where it was about 38 degrees and blustery and people were in winter jackets and shivering.
And we will make the point, 38 in Australia is super hot. Okay. In Celsius, so this is a very cold day that it started.
Very cold day, Fahrenheit. But by the way, inside Mall of America, it's always 72 and sunny Fahrenheit, gorgeous inside the mall.
26 degrees.
Exactly. But on the day that we broke ground, the headlines in the local papers said, "Why Minnesota?" And about two pages of columns saying, "It's never going to work. Why are they building this boondoggle in Minnesota? People aren't going to fly to Minnesota to go shopping. They're crazy. They're going to lose money." And about 85% of the local public believed that it would not work. And to be sad, I was one of those who thought, there's no way this could work. To my joy, it has worked really, really well. I've actually worked at the mall now for 13 years, but I was here the week it opened 26 years ago, brought my son, who was 7 at the time, and we just had a blast, and I've been coming back ever since. So we have a long history of being more than a mall. So it's a huge building. We have 520 stores. We have 40 million annual visitors. Put that into perspective. That's more than the combined populations of North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Montana, Wyoming, and the nation of Canada. More people come in this building every year. So when you think of it in those terms, this is a popular place. But we also have 60 places to eat. We have more than a dozen great attractions, including Nickelodeon Universe, which is our indoor enclosed theme park, which you've already walked around and seen a little bit of. We have 28 rides and attractions, including full-size roller coasters, full-size log chutes, so many fun things to do. This place is so much more than a mall, which is why we're able to drive 40 million people. So we've had a legacy of 26 years now of entertaining people. In fact, we've welcomed well over a billion people into this building, and we're excited as we plan for the next 26 years.
And a lot of people like me, they might have a five-hour layover in at the airport, and they say, well, I'll just jump on the light rail, four stops, and you're in the Mall of America, which is very unusual. There's not many places you can do that, and it's free. You don't have to pay to get in, anything like that.
Absolutely. It's very easy. So for your listeners who have never been to Minneapolis-St. Paul, we have one of the best airports in the nation as well. It's just a wonderful airport. But you're right. You hop in the light rail right at the airport. airport, that brings you to our parking garage. It brings you directly into Mall of America. You walk about 50 feet and you're inside our building, and it's a very easy, fast, convenient way. So even if you come in the winter, when it is a little colder in Minnesota, you don't really have to go outside. You have that layover, you go from the airport onto light rail directly into Mall of America. And by the way, if you come in the winter and you don't have a winter jacket, we'd be happy to sell you one.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of that, the stores you have here are very iconic, and they must be very happy with the experience they're having as well, because in school holiday times, it just is rammed in here, isn't it?
It absolutely. Our big shopping weekend every year is what we call Black Friday weekend, the day after Thanksgiving, that long weekend. Last year, on that day, on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, we had just shy of 300,000 people in this building shopping. It was crazy. Not certain I'd recommend coming on that day, but pretty much any other day is just a joy to be here, because we do have big crowds, but it's a huge building, so there's plenty of room to go around. One of the cool things with 520 stores is we have such an eclectic collection of shopping experiences. We have high-end luxury, and we have options for those who are value-conscious shoppers, those who are looking for children's items, and those who are looking for things for grown-ups and adults as well, right? One of the things that's really unique is a lot of brands will bring their first concepts here to Mall of America, because they know that we're kind of a crossroads of the United States. Sure. Because we have visitors from across this country and across the world coming into our building. It's a great testing ground for them, for new concepts, for new store looks, for new technologies. So we bring a lot of first to the market and first to the country here at Mall of America, so your listeners also get to experience that as well.
Break for the parents too, because they can send the kids on the rides, they can do a bit of shopping. That must be great for them.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful for all generations and all ages, but you're right, for families with kids. We just opened a brand new luxury movie theater complex, CMX Theaters, which, by the way, the food is awesome. It's a dining experience in addition to being a movie experience, and it's luxury. People would love it, but it's luxury at a very affordable price point. Some of the other things that families can do here besides Nickelodeon Universe is we have Sea Life Aquarium. We have the nation's largest underground aquarium here, located at Mall of America. You can see everything from jellyfish to sharks. What's one of the really cool things about this aquarium is they're zoologically certified, meaning they take great care and they have great training on how to care for their animals in a very humane way. In fact, they are known internationally for the wonderful program they have for breeding and caring for animals at their premises. So, and of course, we have other things. We have too many golf courses here at Mall of America. We have indoor race cart, electric race go-kart racing. We have mazes, mirror mazes. We have 3D virtual reality technology experiences you can have. Pretty much anything you can think of, you can do here at Mall of America.
Certainly, we'll only scratch the surface being here for just a few hours. Dan Jasper, Vice President of Communications of the MOA, the Mall of America, can you tell us the website for people who want more information?
Absolutely. People can easily go to www.mallofamerica.com. And you can find out all the information that you need. One of the wonderful things is we have a chat service on our website. It asks you if you have a question. Click on that, and you will have a real-time human person responding to you, and they will answer all of your questions. So if you have any needs, you want to know where to book a hotel, how to get to the mall, what the best place to eat is, because we have 60 places to dine in Mall of America, they can help you with all of that. So we really pride ourselves on offering a concierge customer service experience. So go to our website, mallofamerica.com. You'll find out everything you need to know about the mall. And when you come to visit us at Mall of America, you will receive a warm Minnesota welcome, and ask for Dan, and I'll come and say hey.
To all the Australians out there, really come here. You won't be disappointed. Thank you very much, Dan, for being on the program.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Jeff Harrison reporting from Minneapolis in Minnesota, visiting the Mall of America and chatting there with Dan Jasper. Next on the show, a segment from our friends at Travel Writers Radio in Melbourne, where Sue Ahern interviews Chris Haywood on rejuvenating the city of New York.
Now, can you tell us what's happening in New York? It sounds like it's been totally rejuvenated and renovated.
It's just incredible. New York City is an evolving destination, but in 2019, it's really going to be a remarkable, monumental year. There's a ton of new openings, new hotels, but there's also large-scale developments going on in the city, including the opening of Hudson Yards, which is the largest private real estate development in the history of the United States. In addition to that, we also see the MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art, expanding by a third their gallery space, as well as a new museum on Liberty Island called the Statue of Liberty Museum, right next to Lady Liberty herself. So there's just a ton going on. It's going to be a great year to visit the destination.
Now, you get a lot of Australians. What are the figures like from Australia to New York?
So last year, we had 693,000 Australian visitors. It's our fifth largest overseas market. Next year, that number is going to increase by about 3% to 712,000 visitors. I mean, the Australians just love New York. They love to explore the boroughs beyond Manhattan. They love to shop. They love to sightsee. They love to do everything and anything in New York City. And next year will be the year to want to visit the destination. I mean, I think now is the time to plan because these openings, Hudson Yards is opening in the spring. Statue of Liberty is opening in May. The museum is opening in May. And, of course, the MoMA expansion next summer. So there's going to be a lot of things going on. We also have 117,000 hotel rooms with another 20,000 on the way. So there's plenty of room at the inn and many choices in every corner of the city.
So do Australians stay longer than most people in New York?
Absolutely. They stay on average about 9 days, which is one of our longest staying visitors, and they spend a lot of money. I mean, they stay longer, they spend more, and they explore. They love the nightlife. They love anything New York. We even have Australian coffee shops in New York. That's how much Australia has really infused the destination. So it's very exciting, and they've been coming for many, many years, but in recent years, that number just continues to balloon.
So is there a particular time of the year when Australians go to New York?
Well, I would say they come year-round, but we want to encourage more of them coming during the summer break in January because that's a great time to get great value. That's when our hotel rates are at its lowest, but also a time when it's a little cooler in New York. So if you like snow and you like to enjoy a different side of the destination, this is a cozier time, but definitely colder. But I would say they like to come year-round. I mean, my favorite time, frankly, to visit the destination is the fall, September and October, our fall. And that is a time when the weather is just at its perfection. And the leaves are starting to turn. You've got great fall foliage. And it's just a wonderful time to enjoy the crisp air and to explore the city. So that's a popular time. We also have holidays, of course, in December, November and December. And that's a popular time for international visitors to come and want to shop and experience the beauty and colorfulness of New York at the holidays.
Now, you've got the coffee now, which was a big thing for Australians traveling to New York or America, that you didn't have such good coffee, but you seem to have sorted that out. What about the food? What new destinations can we expect next year?
Well, we've got an amazing food halls that continue to pop up in the destination, and we've got these large-scale developments like Pier 17 at the South Street Seaport, which is going to have celebrity chefs David Chang of Mama Fuku. We've got Andrew Carmelini, and we've got Jun George all opening in this one new development right on the East River waterfront. At Hudson Yards, we also have plenty of new shops and restaurants, including a new Spanish food hall. So that's very exciting. There's also always new restaurants popping up around the destination. And we even have taco stands, gourmet taco stands at the new Domino Park on the Williamsburg waterfront. We have this new place called Taco China that just opened. And he also has Danny Meyer has a new restaurant called Manhattan, which just opened on the 60th floor of a high-rise building in Lower Manhattan. We also have Pastis coming back, which is Keith McNally's restaurant. It will be coming back to the Meatpacking District later this year, possibly early 2019. That is a famous restaurant that was open and then closed and will be reopening again. We also, of course, have the newly opened Blue Box Cafe, which is a new permanent fixture at Tiffany's on Fifth Avenue. So if you want to have breakfast at Tiffany's, now you can. But New York is the dining capital of the world. And we run Restaurant Week twice a year. It's going on right now for 4 weeks, but it will be back in January for 3 weeks, offering two-course lunches for $26 and three-course dinners for $42. So it's a great way to sample the incredible cuisine of New York City. at a better rate.
Because the view is that New York is very expensive.
Absolutely. New York can be expensive, but we try to invite travelers, locals and visitors alike, to come and experience a destination during these off periods. Sometimes in the summertime is when business travel drops off and a lot of New Yorkers leave town, so there's more room. And also in winter, it's a time of year when it's a little quieter. So we try to offer what we call vibrancy programs. So we have Restaurant Week. We also offer 2-for-1 Broadway tickets during certain periods of time, as well as Off-Broadway Week. And we also have a new NYC Must-See Week in January, which offers 2-for-1 admission at many attractions, tours, museums, and more. So we definitely have value, and I highly recommend you go to nycgo.com/free for a list of all the free activity going on in the destination.
So what sort of free things are you offering?
Well, we have free attractions in the city. We have the High Line Park, which is an elevated railway in the sky along Manhattan's west side that is free of charge to walk. We have the Staten Island Ferry, which is free of charge. It's a 25-minute ferry ride from Lower Manhattan over to St. George and Staten Island, passing the Statue of Liberty. Does not cost anything. And the 9/11 Memorial, which are the two pools that were built to commemorate the fallen during 9/11, that area is open to the public free of charge. But New York is the best walking city in the world, and you do not have to spend anything to walk the streets and experience the vibrancy and excitement and energy of New York. And I think that's really amazing. So you can spend as much or as little as you want in the city. We also have free TV tapings. So if you go onto our website, you can look for information about TV tapings and how to sign up for those in advance. And there's certain days of the week which museums offer free or discounted admission. So I think those are things that you can look for. We also have Cheap Eats. There's a lot of food trucks in the city where you can really just get a meal on a shoestring budget. So you don't have to spend as much as you might think.
What's behind this rejuvenation? Was New York getting tired?
Well, you know, New York, for over the last several years, has been enjoying an extraordinary moment in its history. The quality of life of the destination has been enhanced. There's been more developments and new parkland going up, the development of our waterfront. But we've also become the safest big city in America, and there's been a lot of investment in making the city more inviting and cleaner and more welcoming. And the safety and security, I think, is a big driver. But it's all about, like I say, the quality of life. That's really what's drawing people. And it just seems to be getting better and better every day. So that's something that I think is making the destination a draw.
Well, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and we look forward to seeing you in New York City.
This is Travel Radio Australia.
Next on the show, we go over to our friends at Around the World TV in California. GoNomad.com owner-editor Max Hartshorn recently took a trip around San Mateo County in California, and on this segment from Around the World TV, he tells us all about his experiences during that journey.
Well, this right now we're dialing for GoNomad.com,
yes,
because we have the owner and editor of GoNomad, Max Hartshorn, joining us now. Hello, Max.
Hello, good to be with you, Arthur and Rebecca.
It's great to have you back. You know, I was reading a little bit about GoNomad, and I'm so impressed with, I didn't realize that you started in this business as a 23-year-old editor at the Portland Chronicle in Maine.
Wow.
That's right.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, and you're now, what, about 25 or 26?
That's right.
And you bought GoNomad back in, what, 2002? Is that right?
2002, yeah.
And it's become one of the go-to websites for travel information written by professional travel writers, and it's uncompromising in its views. I read one that Jill wrote recently about Santa Barbara. I was blown away by how great she got all the facts and information out there.
Excellent.
Santo Mezcal,
yeah, Carlson's.
They
restaurant.
All appreciated this story. I heard back from a number of them, and they said they really thought it was great to see that in print. Anyway, you're doing more on California than we are. So today you're taking us to San Mateo, I understand.
Yeah, you know, San Mateo County. I was out there in San Francisco for a business meeting, had some extra time, and thought, you know, I want to do a story about this part of California that maybe isn't as well known, only because it's overshadowed by Silicon Valley. And Silicon Valley, of course, everybody gets that in the news all the time with Facebook. And like right now, we're on Facebook Live. Well, Facebook's in San Mateo County, right over the border in Palo Alto. But I was so impressed with, there was so many really fun things to do and places to go and things to eat and enjoy in San Mateo, that big county right south of San Francisco.
Well, tell us
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Obviously the best way to get to San Mateo, if you're coming from anywhere outside of California, is you fly into San Francisco, I assume, or you could fly into San Jose, I suppose.
Yeah, you fly into South San Francisco where the airport is, and then you can start our trip. Now, what we did was we took a neat sort of a circular route. Our first stop was the little town of Pescadero, down on the coast. And Pescadero is famous for two things. It's got a really great goat cheese farm, a goat farm that people raise goats, and you can play with baby goats and eat delectable cheese and look at the beautiful views and enjoy the just nothing like baby goats, one-day-old goats to get you going and to make you inspired.
Wow.
That's awesome. How wonderful. And they have the goat cheese.
No, I guess that's not a goat say, do they?
They have the goat cheese, and they have beautiful scenery, and they learn all about how to make it. And then, of course, in Pescadero, there's also a wonderful place, sort of an institution since the 1890s, I think it was 1890s, is Duarte's, a little seafood and bar restaurant right in the center of that small town, Pescadero. It's right along the coast, and, you know, I love the coast there. And right north of that, a little ways, is the famous beach, Mavericks, which has the biggest waves in the world.
The unbelievable surfing waves are, I mean, that's, their killer waves are so big, but
they're 30 and 40 feet high, yeah. And right north of that, near Half Moon Bay, you see, it's out about a half a mile. You actually can't see it really from the coast, but the surfing activities take place whenever the waves are right. And I guess in the past couple of years, they haven't had the right waves, but they're thinking this year they're going to be back with 30 or 40 foot waves again. And that's Mavericks, a famous surf beach, right up the coast of Half Moon Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And Half Moon Bay is also in San Mateo County?
It is, and Half Moon Bay has the Ritz-Carlton. I'm sure you're familiar with that, Arthur. You're a big wig like you. You probably go to places like the Ritz-Carlton now and then.
Do they have a hostel? Because that's where I was thinking about staying myself.
Yes, well, the Ritz-Carlton in Half Moon Bay is a really nice property. It's got beautiful golf courses all up along the coast, and it's got a great spa, and you can actually enjoy sitting outside of the Ritz-Carlton without even being a paying guest at the Ritz-Carlton. So you can enjoy a little bit of that elegance without necessarily the $1,000 a night.
Hey, get a nice tea. Get a glass of Chardonnay.
Yeah. And it is a beautiful bay, right? It's a Half Moon Bay.
It's a gorgeous bay. And, you know, another thing about Half Moon Bay is Sam's Chowder House, where I got to say, this lobster roll we had could have rivaled something I might have had in New Brunswick, Canada. It was just spectacular.
No kidding. And I didn't know we had lobster rolls that were halfway decent compared to you guys on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Well, they must get the lobsters from here, but they do great chowders and ahi tuna and all kinds of different seafood, and it's a line out the door at Sam's Chowder House. But when we were there, it was slightly rainy, so we're able to get in without any kind of a wait. But that was another highlight of Half Moon Bay. And then, of course, I just love seeing the crabbers and seeing the boats at Pillar Point, the marina there. It's just a real beautiful ocean. And then we switched gears and we went inland to Woodside, which is another small little town right on the Skyline Trail, right along the center of San Mateo in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and we went to a place called Filio. I'm sorry, am I saying it right? Filoli.
Oh, Filoli, yeah, it's Filoli. I used to live in Woodside. I lived on Albion Way in Woodside, and you're talking about the Filoli Mansion,
yes.
It was originally their home. Yeah, sure. I knew the Filoli.
Beautiful place.
Yeah.
650 acres of grounds and English gardens and a beautiful old house you can tour, and just the wonderful docents that take care of you and show you all around and sort of learn about these aristocrats and how they lived. And it's just a gorgeous place to walk around with peacocks. They have peacocks there. And again, it was a beautiful day when we were there. And then that also segued well into the winery with Thomas Fogarty Winery in Woodside. They make great wines, and they have a tasting room there.
Oh, really?
Enjoyed that quite a bit.
Mm. How fun, wine tasting up there in San Mateo County.
Yeah,
I'd love to try that. Are they known for their Chardonnays, or what's their most popular varieties, Max?
You know, I When I was there, we tasted a bunch of different ones, Pinots and Chardonnay. I'm not sure if they have any specific one that they're
so they did the whole lineup. I love it. I want to bat through the whole lineup, Max. That sounds fabulous. I love that you can go wine tasting because California is so known for that. And in San Mateo County, they have that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sure, it is. And, you know, so San Mateo, it's got a lot of rural places. I found that Half Moon Bay is a great pumpkin producer. And around October, you go to Half Moon Bay and they have a giant pumpkin parade and pumpkins all along the road on Route 1 there. And some really neat stuff to see as far as agriculture and that kind of thing in that Half Moon Bay area. But it's a big county, and we went a little bit further south, and we went to Redwood City, which is the, you know, the capital of San Mateo County. Mm-hmm. And Redwood City is the city with the greatest climate, according to Aaron McCortley. The climate is tested by the government as the best climate in the world.
I know, I know.
That's what it does.
It's not Santa Barbara? Oh, boy.
But does Redwood City have any redwoods?
I don't think there's any left. I think it's got Oracle, and it's got Electronic Arts, and it's got a lot of malls and a lot of neat little cafes and places to walk around, but it's definitely not very rural.
Yeah,
I think the redwoods are long gone,
but
unfortunately.
No, the redwoods are down by the coast, though, because you can still go to a redwood forest down by Santa Cruz, which is very close
San
Mateo.
Now, we're getting out of San Mateo County in Santa Cruz, but you are right, Rebecca. There are redwoods that you can enjoy in St. Cosa Mira Woods right across from San Francisco. But another thing that they have in San Mateo, which I thought was pretty neat, was the computer museum. They have this huge museum all dedicated to computers. Uh-huh. And this is a museum that's a real world-class museum because there's so much money there in Mountain View. They took over a company's building that looked like it was a giant company, and they must have gone out of business. So the computer museum is able to have just about anything they want in there, including some of the original ENIAC, the original computer that they helped in the first computer ever built in World War II, ENIAC. They actually have some parts of that there, along with some funny old big machines that run tapes and, you know, old Commodore machines. And you just get the chance to really learn the history of computers and about data and about all those things that I'm interested in that Silicon Valley is all about. And it really starts from the very, very roots of abacuses up to the modern supercomputers.
I want to take my kids there, Max, because I think kids should see where this all comes from. They have no idea. Like, you know, we're older and we saw it all develop, but they didn't. So to see the huge advances, I mean, some of those computers are like, here, like a whole building big, just for the same amount of drive we could have on a phone these days. That's how they started.
I know. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. And the Dodd takes you around, really knows his stuff, and you start in one area where you're really starting at the most basic 1940s, and it just goes by decade, and you see how things have moved along. And then when you leave the computer museum and you're right in Google's territory, you see all the Google bikes, see all the people driving around with the Google bikes, and all the buildings that are owned by Google.
And YouTube's home base is up there too, and San Bruno, home of YouTube.
That's right. YouTube is right there. It's the whole nut. And Facebook, of course, goes on and on and on. I just was stunned by how big Facebook was. They were driving along a highway, and it's just nothing but buildings, continuous buildings. And so that's also Facebook. And then you turn the corner, and you see the giant thumbs up, which is where people get their picture taken at One Hacker Way at Facebook. Of course, that's always a fun little thing. And, you know, so it's sort of like tourism for tech tourism, as it were. And it's become a big thing. People love doing that, seeing these buildings. Although there's not much that Google's pretty tight about. You can't really go in the buildings. They were sort of very nervous when I was taking pictures and looking around. They didn't want me to go inside and learn anything.
Wow. Well, Max, that's an amazing tour of San Mateo. If people want to know more about San Mateo, I bet they can find out about it on GoNomad.com, right?
Yeah, in fact, tomorrow there'll probably be an article coming out. I'm just finishing up now, so it's right off the tip of my tongue right now about all about San Mateo. And it's a great destination. I'd recommend it. Even people who live in places like Santa Barbara, it's not that far away.
I appreciate
Four
all
hours.
The great insights. This is great information, and you've inspired me to want to go up there and get my picture with
my
thumbs up.
I'm taking my kids.
We're going to go see that in the museum. And appreciate you taking the time to join us today on Around the World, Max.
News and features from around Australia and around the world. This is Travel Radio Australia.
We're going to explore a little bit about Egypt, and today we have two of the finest exponents in terms of Egyptian tourism. So could you tell us a little bit about what you guys are up to currently and what you might be doing in the future?
Okay, so I'm the marketing manager of Sunrise Resorts and Cruises. It's a chain for hotels all over Egypt, mainly on the Red Sea, and Hurghada, Sharm el Sheikh, and Marsa Alam, and cruises in Luxor and Aswan. So right now the business is doing quite well. We're looking for a bit more expansions in the Red Sea, and that's it.
That's great. So in terms of Egypt, if people obviously are familiar with it, but if they haven't yet visited, what would you say the main attractions would be?
I would say the most important thing that we sell in Egypt is that you can find more than one thing to sell. If you say, okay, you want to come to Egypt, you can come to visit the Red Sea, enjoy the beach, nightlife. You can come to Cairo, very vibrant. You can go to Luxor and Aswan, see the monuments, history. So we have a lot to offer. So I would answer this question with, let's say, 3-4 points. Come to the beach, come to the weather, come to history, come to, I would say, vibrant entertainment, nightlife. So it's very, I would say, it's kind of a complete destination. It even helps us when we're coming to sell our destination, that I'm not only selling a leisure destination. No, it could be corporate. It has a lot of business opportunities. It has the Nile cruises, culture, nightlife. Even you see the new face of Egypt, Egypt after the revolution. There are a lot of developments, even in the resorts in Hurghada, Sharm el Sheikh, Marsa Alam. This is a new area which is developing a lot. So I believe you can come for Egypt for so many different reasons.
Fantastic. So really, you're saying it's a multifaceted destination, which is hugely exciting. And in terms of a potential winter destination, because many people, particularly from Australia, where we're feeding to now, and London, their default mode is Dubai. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of winter destination, Egypt sounds as if it has some very good positives.
Of course. So, see, it's not only winter destination, because Egypt is quite big. So in the winter, you could go to the south in Luxor and Aswan, where it's super hot weather there. In the summer, you can go up north, north coast, Alexandria. In mid-season, all year long, you can go on the Red Sea. So all year long, you could find the good weather in Egypt.
Okay, that's great. I mean, I remember my first visit to Egypt, and I went diving in the Red Sea, and the first night I got there, I thought there were fireworks happening over the other side, and they weren't fireworks, it was Jordan, and they were doing some tests with weapons. So in terms of, shall we say, security, are things much calmer now and more stable?
I think, yes, it has been since the revolution stable, because this is, we live in Egypt, and she's my cousin, she lives in Egypt, she goes out at night, my wife, she's still in Egypt, I have my children. So Egypt, on safety levels, I would say, yes, it's 100% safe, yes. But what we say is that this incident which can happen, this can happen everywhere in the world, and we see it everywhere. So you cannot say Egypt is safe or not safe, no. Touristic areas in Egypt, I can clearly say it's 100% safe. This is out of question.
That's really great to hear. That's fantastic. And, of course, a major part of people's holidays is the cuisine, of course. Most people remember a good meal or a bad meal, and in terms of the cuisine, I remember it was very good in Egypt. And can you just tell me a little bit about the culinary delights in Egypt?
So we have a few very exciting dishes. Most popular is called koshari. And this is the main fuel, like, of all Egyptians. It has like pasta, rice, onions, lentils, and just one could fill you up like for the whole day. It has all nutrients inside. And the Egyptian cuisine in general is very tasty. So we like to play with herbs, with spices. It's quite tasty.
Oh, you're getting me hungry already. And in terms of washing the beautiful food down, I mean, what would be your recommendation in terms of local beverages, in terms of drink?
Local beverages, I think we're good. We have our local wine and local beer. This is something everybody needs to try it. Even us in Sunrise, we have our local wine in Sunrise. Yes, this is, if we say, this is the alcoholic drinks. But for rest, you can try. We have very nice cocktails, natural cocktails for the fruits, because in Egypt, you see good quality of fruits as well offered in our resorts and in every place in Egypt.
Karkadeh is quite, the hibiscus, yes. Karkadeh, like we drink it cold and hot, that's quite popular as well in Egypt.
Okay, fantastic. So, for all the viewers out there, if they want to find you guys and they want to go to Egypt, what's your website? How can we find you?
Our website is sunrise-resorts.com. And this is for if you want to go to a hotel or a cruise. However, for a full package, is our travel agents. They're partners with us as well as Bright Sky or Blue Sky.
Okay, so to everyone out there, it's Bright Sky or Blue Sky.
Sunrise.
So check it out, and we hope to see you all in Egypt very soon. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And that report about Sunrise Resorts in Egypt was exclusive to Travel Radio Australia. To finish off the show, we just go back to our friends in Melbourne at Travel Writers Radio, where the hosts Graham Kemlow and Veronica Matheson test out a very useful little smartphone app.
Now, Veronica, you remember the other week we played on air with an Illy mobile translator thing about the third of the size of a phone?
Oh, and didn't we have fun?
Yeah, it was a little bit slower than we'd probably like, but it did three languages, Spanish, Japanese or Chinese. The great thing about it was you didn't have to be connected to the internet. It had enough smarts to handle relatively simple questions or requests and turn them into, when you spoke on one side, it spat the language out on the other side. Well, there's another way to do this, and it's via smartphone. Now, I found an app called Say Hi. It runs on phones or tablets running iOS 8 or later and Android 4.4 or later. You know the best message? It's free.
That's the best message. Maybe you should try that in one of the languages and see do they know what it means.
But you know, there's 51 languages. And not only that, there's 50 dialects. There's about 10 dialects of Arabic, in case you want it. There's 9 versions of English, a couple of French, and a whole lot of Spanish. I didn't know there were so many different dialects in Spanish. But let's try it out. I've got my Android, my Samsung thing here, and it's called Say Hi, S-A-Y-H-I. Let's go for English to French. I've just got to... Okay, so I'm telling you that's what we're doing. Here we go. I'm going to tap the microphone to speak and it'll come out in French. Hello and welcome to Travel Writers Radio.
Radio Taite.
We'll try that again. Yeah, it didn't really get it all. Let's do something simpler.
Say hi.
Hello, where is the nearest toilet?
Bonjour, où est la toilette la plus proche?
Bonjour, où est la toilette la plus proche? Plus proche means obviously very fast. I need it badly. So it takes a minute to work it out, and it also requires the internet. So you need to be in a city with Wi-Fi in order to use this. Although you can speak that phrase, and it'll on screen, it'll type it up. So you could show it to someone.
Oh, that's very
and point
handy.
To the sentence.
Yeah. In fact, that's probably the handier way to go,
it
maybe.
It may well be. You also can type something in. So if you see a word in wherever
on
you
a
are,
notice.
Paris, on a notice board, you could maybe just type in that word and it would tell you what it is and you can go to somewhere else. Now, there are other apps that do this. There's Google Translate. It's probably the most popular app on Android. And many of them come with the app already pre-installed, fairly accurate. It does 103 languages. And also, interestingly, Google Translate, you can take a picture of the text and it will translate the words in the picture. Now, that's pretty tricky.
That is clever.
Microsoft Translator, which is one of the powers behind Say Hi that I just demonstrated, that's also free, a personal translation app for 60 languages. iTranslate, is a leading translator and dictionary app, and it deals with about 100 languages. And then there's one called Voice Translator, which can hold a conversation in any language. Now, that's a big claim, but it does 80 languages. So anyway, so if you want to try somewhere overseas or even with your next-door neighbour, I think Say Hi was pretty simple and has the feature that it'll turn words into text.
But let's face it, Graham, most Australians go overseas and they expect everybody to speak English.
We do. You got it there.
Thank you to Graham Kemmler and Veronica Matheson from Travel Writers Radio. I'd also like to thank all the other contributors to the show. Jeff Harrison, who was in America. Sue Ahern of Travel Writers Radio with her guest Chris Haywood. Go Nomad owner-editor Max Hartshorn. You can get GoNomad.com on your phone, on your laptop, on any kind of computer, and find out all about every place around the world, just about. And that's it for this month. Until we meet again with the next edition of Travel Radio Australia, I'm Ren Swears, wishing you all happy trails.